Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. We'll start today's show in the Premier League, and what a game it turned out to be between Arsenal and Manchester City. Arsenal were excellent for the majority of the clash, thoroughly deserving of the lead that they took in the first half. Lovely finish from Saka. However, City would get themselves back into it after the break. Mahrez converting a penalty after Bernardo Silva was brought down. Gabriel was then sent off for the host, and then later on, Rodri would score the winner to give Manchester City all 3 points and to extend their lead at the top of the table to now 11 points. Don't forget Chelsea and Liverpool in action on Sunday. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we? Craig Burley's with us, as is Frank Leboeuf and Nader Manua.
How does it feel to start 2022 with nobody in the studio because none of the pundits want to be in there with?
Hey, it's nice, mate. The peace and quiet is fantastic, I tell you. See if we do the same at my house. Craig, obviously, you know, the great game, good performance by Arsenal, but it is those talking points and those penalties that everyone seems to be discussing. Let's start with the first one, shall we? The Odegaard challenge from Edison. For you, is it a pen?
Yes, it was. But I have no criticism of the referee for missing it at full speed. But listen, this is where the VAR and the referees that are operating it, which is more importantly, I think more to the point, the referees that are operating are looking at the replays. We got to get rid of this sort of jargon that has flown around since VAR came out now in clear and obvious. VAR is there to correct incorrect decisions, period. Particularly in the penalty box, right? Not really too fussed about other places in the field unless it's dangerous play. In the penalty box, was it a foul? Yes or no? That's quite simple. And we had replays of this challenge, and you just highlighted it. There's one particular replay that clearly shows Ederson comes through the left boot of Martin Odegaard, and so it's a penalty kick. So it's crystal clear for me, the laws here. Key point, is it a foul, yes or no? This is why we have the replays, to aid and abet the referee in decisions like this. And I was astonished when he never at least asked the referee to go and look at the monitor.
Frank, is it a penalty for you?
For me, it's not. It's not crystal clear for me. It seems to me that Ederson touches the ball with the inside of his foot. It's true that he's touching Odegaard. Let's say he would have gone his way. I wouldn't have said anything. But I agree with Craig. The ref should have gone to the VAR and made his own decision. Football is made of interpretation. And sometimes, because I've seen the replay like 20 or 30 times since it happens, and I don't have a clear decision. It's just my feeling that Ederson touches the ball. So as long as I feel that Ederson touched the ball, it's not a penalty for me. But I can understand that other people will think otherwise. But the referee should have gone to the VAR and made his own decision. He's the chief of the game at that time. But nobody gave him the time and the possibility to have his own decision, in fact.
Nadim?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm sort of in the middle here because, say, two of the three angles look as if maybe Ederson gets just a slight touch on the ball, but then there is that one angle where it looks like he's just taken Odegaard out, and there is contact there. But I can see why there's sort of like an inconclusive sort of state with the VAR official. So as a consequence, can they say to him, well, you've definitely done something wrong here? Because, you know, they're going to go off his judgment. Like, as I say, I was looking at it in real time, and I thought, oh, that's a great tackle. Look at another angle, says, oh, that's good. But then all of a sudden, as I say, there's that one angle, and you're like, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, you know, that's the decision they made. And if it was me, if they gave the penalty, I wouldn't have really grumbled based on the penultimate angle just a second ago. But as it was, the referee decided it wasn't going to be one. And as a consequence, the video referee didn't have enough to turn it around. And that's unfortunately just the way the system works based on the referee's decision.
Despite that decision going against them, Arsenal would open the scoring in the first half, Craig. They were the better team, weren't they?
No, they were excellent. And, you know, talked on yesterday's show about how they've moved on since the debacle at the Etihad. It's the best I've seen Arsenal play for a long time, and I include when they won the FA Cup. I thought they were very energetic. They were solid defensively. They passed the ball really well. They were really tidy in the middle of the park in terms of the possession. They got Odegaard into some great possessions. That allowed him to get turned. Then they were able to feed the wide guys. They got their fullbacks forward as well. And they really caused Man City as many problems as I've seen. And I hasten to say this, probably any team in Europe this year for 45 minutes, and I include the games against PSG, they really had a go at Manchester City. And they looked really good. And I was impressed with them. And more so that the way that they used the ball and how compact defensively they were as well. So a really, really impressive performance, certainly for an hour or so from Arsenal.
Yeah, of course. And then City getting themselves back into the game by a penalty that went to VAR and was reviewed and then was given to the visitors, Nathan. Was this the right decision?
See, so I think this was the right decision, but not necessarily because of the first contact. I think it's for the pull. And when you're watching the game in real time, Xhaka thinks that he's not fouled him because he's not tackled him, but he's almost like disregarded the fact that there's a clear video of him pulling the shirt of Bernardo Silva. And that's from a timing standpoint. Like the way Bernardo Silva went down, people say, you know, he embellished it, whatever. That, for me, that's winning a penalty. And the timing of it coming after the shirt's been pulled basically left the video assistant referee with no other choice but to say, well, this is an offence. And then when the referee goes and looks at it, it's very hard to ignore something that's that obvious. And I think for some, they were upset about whether they thought it was the first contact after Bernardo Silva cut on the outside. But for me, once you see a shirt getting pulled like that and somebody's on the wrong side of you, it'd be very, very hard for a referee to say that's not a penalty.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree with Nedim. I think there is two fouls from Xhaka. The one is the leg. Even if he doesn't tackle, he put his leg when the ball is already gone and his leg is between Bernardo Silva and the ball and he touches Bernardo Silva. On top of it, there is a pull. There is a clear penalty. I think Xhaka has to stop that. I mean, he can be a very good player. He's very dedicated to the club and the team that he plays for. But he makes silly mistakes with the experience that he has. He should let him go. You know, open the door a little bit to put him on the close side, but don't make those silly fouls. Don't pull the shirt. You know, everybody's going to see it. And don't pretend after that it never happened on top of it.
And then Gabriel went, don't worry, Xhaka, I will distract from people being angry. You're giving away a penalty. I'm going to get two yellow cards in 3 minutes and get myself sent off, Craig.
Yeah, well, obviously, he got the first yellow card. And then, obviously, he knows his situation. I have to say, it was an absolutely brilliant first touch from Jesus on the chest to take it away from him. Oof. But as Nenim and Frank will tell you, as two defenders, then you've got to make a decision when you're on a yellow card. If you're going to go charging into the back of somebody or towards the back of somebody, you have to be aware that you're not going to be clumsy and clatter into them, particularly when you're on a yellow card. So he's guilty of that and so he deserved to go. Which is a shame for the game in a sense, because it meant it was just total domination from Manchester City in terms of possession. Obviously, it took them a while to get the goal. But yeah, that was another... And listen, we've seen Gabriel do these things before. We've seen Xhaka do these things many, many times. This is ill-discipline, particularly from Xhaka. And I agree with the boys. I don't know why there's been so much debate floating around about whether it was a penalty or not, because it was a lazy leg and a clear shirt pull, which showed again in replays. Arsenal, I don't think most Arsenal fans are grumbling about the shirt pull or Bernardo Silva going down too easily. Maybe they are. But I think most of the grumbles I've sort of seen or came across have been that why wasn't the VAR official in that day, who's a new guy, why didn't he tell the referee to go and look at the first penalty to have some consistency in decision-making? I think that would be a gripe Arsenal fans might have more than the actual incident involving Xhaka and Bernardo Silva.
And I think the gripe they have as well, Nathan, that you take a look at the 90 minutes and they're kind of the architects of their own downfall.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of people, as Craig said there, this is probably the best that they've seen Arsenal play in such a long time. They look really good. I thought they pressed City well. I thought they moved the ball well. And more impressively for me, defensively, they look really solid. They really weren't giving much to City at all, who were struggling to be getting in behind them. So the fact that then, you know, there's that penalty decision and then the red card, like, this is all in the space of 5 minutes. Basically, the whole tone of the game changed from being so much on top to all of a sudden being on the back foot. And both incidents, you know, you could say they didn't need to happen, especially the Gabriel one. Because when Ederson has the ball at his feet, when he plays it long, he plays it so flat that sometimes you can't contest with the person that's receiving the ball, and it's best to just stay behind them. So to be able to sell yourself like that, commit that foul, it changed, for me, that changed the whole game. But again, nobody forced him to do it, but that's the decision he made, and as a consequence, further down the line, leads to a defeat.
But I think what we did see, and it's been coming, is the fact that if Arsenal can continue with something close to that kind of form, they are going to be a big shout for the top four, Dan, because that's the first time I've really seen them play like that against elite-level competition. We can argue about City at the moment, potentially, possibly again, the best footballing team in Europe. Certainly the strongest side in England at the moment by quite some distance. And Arsenal have really gone toe-to-toe with them. And I think that's going to give them some hope going forward, but also set a bar for them to say, OK, we lost the game, we're not happy about some of the decisions, we made some bad decisions ourselves, but that's the standard that we can play at. And when you look at some of the other teams in there, you look at Tottenham, how they scraped a win, you look at West Ham, didn't play well, but won, then Arsenal are as good as any up there, as well as Man United. So I think the bigger picture for them is the way they played, not against a mid-table team, but against an excellent Manchester City.
Well, I want to carry on that top four discussion, but to do so, I feel we have to mention the game that you just talked about, Craig. Spurs leaving extraordinary late against struggling Watford, beating them 1-0 away, taking all 3 points, of course, to keep them very much in this race for the top four. Sorry, it was Sanchez's late strike, 96th minute, which gave them all 3 points. I thought, in contrast to what we saw in the Arsenal game, Craig, this was a very average performance from Spurs, particularly in the final third.
Yeah, but I think this is where part of the problem that Conte has to solve is that they've played two teams in the last two games in Southampton and Watford that they've dominated. And they're a team who, when we saw them play against Liverpool in particular, and there have been others, when it's a fast-flowing end-to-end game, they're sort of sitting back and then they hit in the counter-attack. That's kind of suiting their style at the moment, and maybe we'll see a change. And Conte's talked about, you know, what he needs from Daniel Levy. He's been told he'll get funds to spend. He's evaluated the squad now. He said that today after the game. I've evaluated the squad. I know all the players. I know what I need. And I just feel when they're playing teams like Watford in particular, who are scrapping for their life, then that's not something that suits this particular Tottenham team and this system.
Arsenal or Spurs, who's finishing higher, Frank?
Well, right now I would say Arsenal. The way they played today, I didn't say a word about the way they played today, but I think they convinced me that something has changed there over there. Because some people are going to say that Manchester City didn't play well today. Yes, but it's because of Arsenal. The Gunners showed their strength, the way they were tactically very well organized. And if I compare, you know, the way they play, the consistency that they had for an hour before Gabriel was sent off, make me think that they're better than Tottenham. Now, I don't want to be too harsh on the Spurs, because remember, before Conte comes up, they were nowhere near it. And even if they weren't good today, we saw the Spurs from the past month before Conte arrived. They won today. They could have lost that game. And I'm sure they would have lost that game, you know, a month or 2 months ago. Now they won the last minute of the game with a crazy ending. So everything is on the green light for them too. They have to get, of course, more consistency. But we all know that, and they all know that too.
Yeah, well, from a Spurs perspective, Nathan, well, in the end, there's going to be games like this. You take the 3 points and run. Or do you read into it a little deeper in the fact that they have been struggling to kind of dominate teams when they've got most of the possession?
I think in terms of performance and like style of play, then maybe yes, that can be worked upon. But while you're still getting results, I think you have to remain positive. I think looking at the fact that, you know, you're not in fourth at this moment in time, but you have games in hand which can put you in there and put you in there with the 3 points ahead of, I think, Arsenal or maybe even Manchester United behind you should they win their games in hand. I think that's a really positive position to be in. And the reality of the situation is, you know, we want to talk about performance through is it nice play, how many chances do they create? But as we've kind of seen from City today, who were put under pressure by Arsenal, they still managed to find a way to win the game. And if we're saying for Man City, that's what champions do, then for Spurs, why can't that be what teams who finish in the Champions League places do when compared to others as well?
West Ham with the win away against Palace, are they in the conversation at all, Craig?
I think they're in the conversation. I think it will be tough for them to get above the Europa places. They didn't play brilliant today. A great goal from Lanzini, fantastic goal. It was a good open game, but I just feel that their strength of depth will just let them down in the end. If something happens again to Mikel Antonio up front, they struggle for a replacement there. I think if David Moyes gets that side into the top six or seven, I think he'll have done and is doing a fantastic job. But I think when you see Arsenal play, Tottenham play, and the strength of squad that Manchester United have and the change of management, I think it will be tough for them.
Just to confirm then, all the results are from the Premier League that we saw on New Year's Day. It all started with Arsenal and Manchester City playing out a 2-1 win for City. Spurs, meanwhile, with a 1-0 victory away against Watford. And it finished West Ham 3, Crystal Palace 2.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's focus on Spain now as Real Madrid will start 2022 top of the table. Their opening match of the year is against Getafe and they'll go into that game 8 points clear of Sevilla at the top. There was a lot of speculation about a number of players who tested positive for COVID, but in the end, they're only missing Vinicius Jr., Luka Jovic and Camavinga due to positive COVID tests. Danny Carvajal and Gareth Bale out, meanwhile, because of an injury. Sid Lowe joins us. Sid, Real Madrid are just in a lovely position, really, at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, they almost couldn't be better, could it? In terms of the lead that they have at the top of the table, in terms of the fact that even the COVID positive tests have not really impacted upon them the way that they've impacted on other clubs. As you say, the list we thought would be longer, but possibly the most significant of the changes there is that Thibaut Courtois, who tested positive, has now given 3 negative tests in a row. There's been a little bit of discussion, actually, about what exactly you do with players coming back from COVID, because in theory, at least, they have to be isolated for 7 days, but you can make an application to the health authorities and say, look, this is a player who's tested negative 3 times. So Courtois will be available. And as you say, Real Madrid's position is very, very strong indeed in La Liga at the moment. I mean, realistically, and Ancelotti said this the other day, they do have Sevilla close enough to them to compete for the title. But to be perfectly honest, you look at the table and you think no one else really now can push them towards the league title.
So it could be a very special year for Real Madrid overall, as we said, very much favourites to go and win La Liga title. And also, this is the year, of course, that finally Kylian Mbappe will become a Real Madrid player. That's certainly what the front page of Marca is alluding to. What has been interesting, I thought, over the last few days is kind of the snowballing stories that we've seen, Sid, that it may not only be Mbappe, but also Erling Haaland as well. This is a Madridista dream, isn't it?
I mean, it really is. You look at it from a Spanish point of view, and of course, there's been a lot of discussion about the idea that maybe, you know, maybe Spain could replicate the Messi-Ronaldo era by having Mbappe go to Real Madrid and Haaland go to Barcelona. And actually, the far more likely outcome, in terms of a Spanish club at least, would be Haaland turning up at Real Madrid rather than Barcelona, who of course have the financial muscle to be able to do it, and I think possibly the capacity to persuade him more than Barcelona. Although, let's see how this plays out. What is, without doubt, true is that this is something that Real Madrid would very much like to make happen, something that they believe they can make happen. And of course, the irony of this is that one of the reasons why Real Madrid could now make this happen is Paris Saint-Germain. If Paris Saint-Germain had called Real Madrid's bluff or accepted their bid of €200 million for Kylian Mbappe in the summer, there is no way that Real Madrid would now be chasing Haaland as well. But now the fact that Madrid are very, very confident that they'll get Mbappe for free. Now, no one is ever free, of course, because there's a whole series of bonuses when you sign a player. But the idea that they now get Mbappe for free suddenly means, ooh, that €180 million or €200 million that we didn't spend on Mbappe, if only there was another really great striker out there that we could spend some of this money on.
And Sid, it would very much put kind of Real Madrid back on the map since Ronaldo left.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's an important way of putting it as well, because this isn't just about the football or purely about the football and what this means in terms of how good a team they can be. I think there is an emotional kind of component to this as well. And as you say, look, the idea that you put Real Madrid back on the map, whether, you know, there'll be Madrid fans screaming at their screens right now saying we've never been off the map and they're still the biggest club in the world and all of those kind of things, which I think broadly speaking they'd be right in saying those things. But there has, I think, been, if you like, kind of an emotional need over the last 2 or 3 years to reinforce the idea that this is still a really big club in terms of competing every year for the very biggest titles. Now, last year Real Madrid reached the semi-finals of the Champions League, but it was a very curious Champions League, because it kind of felt all the way through like, well, Real Madrid not really going to win this. And actually reaching the semi-finals felt like a success. And I think you're right, if Mbappe turns up, which looks very, very likely, and if Haaland was to turn up as well, then absolutely there's an emotional component to this that says we are now the biggest again.
Meanwhile, very much on the opposite end of the spectrum, the dumpster fire that is Barcelona continues. They're in action against Mallorca on Sunday, and just COVID has decimated this squad. You take a look at the players who are unavailable. It's quite extraordinary. The list is almost quicker to tell you who is available. Sid, why did La Liga not decide to cancel this game, given the amount of players that are out?
Well, look, Xavi Hernandez himself said that this game should be cancelled. He described it as adulterating the competition to go ahead with this. But, I mean, in a way, the answer is very simple. And I know this isn't a particularly satisfactory answer to a lot of people, and indeed it's not a satisfactory answer to Xavi, but the answer is very simple. This is the protocol. This is the protocol as well that all of the clubs signed. So, essentially, to put this in the most simple terms possible, the protocol says that games will go ahead, that teams will be told that they should play for as long as they have at least 13 players available. Now, here's the key. 13 players, of which only 5 have to be specifically first team players and officially first team players, in other words, on first team contracts. So of those 5, right, you get those 5, you can then get the rest of the 13 from your B team or even from your juvenil team, from the what would essentially be the third team in Barcelona's case. Now, obviously it's true, if you look at Barcelona's squad, quite a lot of the players who've played really well this year are already officially B-team players. So that's true of Nico, and it's true of Gavi and players coming through, people that we've seen already play. But essentially Barcelona are in a position where they have plenty of players available according to that protocol. So the game will go ahead anyway. Now, not everybody that's missing is missing because of COVID. Sergio Busquets, for example, is suspended. Mm-hmm. Ferran Torres hasn't been registered yet. Dani Alves had COVID, but wouldn't have been registered yet anyway. So it's not purely about COVID, but you're absolutely right. You look at that squad list, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I'm right in saying that I think 11 of them are officially first team players and 10 are officially not first team players. But that 11 first team players includes 3 goalkeepers. So it's not just that this, you know, it's, and I, by the way, I mean, I, you know, this is very, very largely tongue-in-cheek and very largely kind of being a bit silly about it. But I quite like the idea of Xavi looking at his squad and thinking, yeah, so Ter Stegen in midfield then.
Perfect. That April Fool could come true. Sid, you mentioned there Ferran Torres not registered yet. Why not?
Well, essentially because as Matteo Alemán, who's the director of football of the club, admitted just before Christmas, he said, look, for us to register for Ferran Torres, because of the league's financial fair play rules, someone else has to depart. Now, What we were told today, I thought, was really very, very interesting indeed. And Xavi Hernandez said this in his pre-match press conference. He was talking about negotiations over a new deal for Ousmane Dembélé. And he linked the signing, or the registering, because the signing has already happened, the registering of Ferran Torres to a new deal for Dembélé. In other words, that deal would somehow have liberated money now to be able to pay and register Ferran Torres now. So presumably it would have involved some sort of postponement of payments for Dembélé to push those further down the track. Because that can't happen now. In order for Ferran Torres to join in terms of fulfilling the league's financial fair play rules, others will have to depart first. And of course, it's only the 1st of January. Nobody has left yet, so there isn't that space there. So Barcelona have signed him, but they can't yet register him. Now, they've got a little bit of margin for manoeuvre. Why? Of course, because Sergio Aguero was forced to retire, but they've got to bring in Dani Alves as well. So they need others to leave, or the financial construction of players' contracts, in other words, Dembélé, to change in order for him to be registered.
Do they learn nothing from the past, Sid? I don't think many clubs are knocking down the door of City to get Ferran Torres. There wasn't a big scrap to do it. Why not sort your house out first before you bring in another element to it?
Right, OK, so playing devil's advocate here, I think from Barcelona's point of view, because their argument would be that this is sorting out their house, that they needed this player and they needed to do it now, and they got a very favourable deal from Manchester City. Now,
not
in terms of the basic price, because... Well, they can't play him just yet, but they will believe, of course, that over the course of January they will be able to get him registered, and probably sooner rather than later. And so they look at this and say, well, OK, it's a beneficial deal now in which Manchester City will not be demanding all that money up front. We'll be able to deal with that in stages and in instalments over the next, well, certainly between now and the summer, when they can make more movements, and which, of course, includes the departure of Antoine Griezmann for €40 million. So that's part of it. That would be part of their argument. The other part of their argument would be that they will be very confident, or... And this is possibly the foolish thing. Are they being foolishly confident that things will change in terms of the financial fair play structure, the salary cap structure in January to enable them to register him? But yes, it would be an enormous disaster from their point of view now if, having signed Ferran Torres, they couldn't register him. And let's go back to something very basic. And I don't necessarily want to say this is the same situation, but of course it's all born of the same situation. In the summer, Barcelona briefed two or three times, it's okay. The Messi situation has been resolved. We've got this fixed now. And then there was a point when they went to the La Liga, twice in fact, had La Liga investigate it, look into the numbers and say, this still doesn't fulfil the criteria. And so that optimism, which Barcelona have, that's the reason this has gone through. But of course, that optimism, there is always the risk that some of the things that they think will fall into place don't do so.
It really is quite something. And meanwhile, Sid, the defending champions, of course, out of the title race. I don't think many would have thought that at the start of the season, given the fact that we thought that Barca and Real Madrid were both in transition. And it's interesting now, the likes of Kieran Trippier, I know everyone is going to be linked to Newcastle over the next few weeks, but reports suggesting that they have put in an official bid and the clubs are talking about the England international maybe going back to the Premier League.
Yeah, and of course this was underlined by Diego Simeone himself today in the pre-match press conference when he said publicly, and I think it's the first time that he's engaged with this issue at all publicly, and he said, look, we're now in a situation where Kieran has to make up his mind whether he's going or not. And if he does, then we will act, of course, in consequence with what his decision is. And if he does, then we will move and we will make the movements we need to make to find a solution, which is what we always do. In other words, for the first time, we've heard Atletico Madrid publicly say, yeah, he could go. And yes, this is all about him now. Now, that's not quite true, of course. It's not all about him. It's about whether Newcastle or any other club that are interested in him, by the way, because I wouldn't be at all surprised if other Premier League clubs now suddenly think, OK, this is worth discussing. They will now have to, of course, come up with a bid that Atletico Madrid accept. And Atletico could still turn it down, which they did in the summer, not from Newcastle, but from other clubs. So Atletico Madrid still have to accept this, but this is the first time they've publicly engaged with, yes, Kieran now has to make up his mind. This is a movement that's been nothing to do with us, but we're now confronted with the possibility of the fact that Kieran Trippier leaves.
This is interesting, Sid, because I remember reading an interview that you did with Trippier maybe a year ago, and he seemed happy, seemed settled, seemed to be embracing the new life in Madrid. What happened?
This is interpretive from my point of view. I think what happened was a couple of things. I think one of them was, of course, the ban last year for him breaking FA regulations on gambling. And I think what that did was it created... I'm not going to go so far as to call it distrust, but I think it created, a slight break in the relationship, or a slight distancing or cooling in the relationship between Trippier and Atletico Madrid. And I think there was a certain degree of a feeling within Atletico Madrid that they had been, if you like, the victims of this ban, almost more than Trippier himself was. And of course, the fact that the ban didn't damage the England national team in any way, and Simeone was public about that, about saying, hang on, how can it be that one of the interested parties rules on this? And oh, look, what a convenience. He's banned for our games and he comes back just in time to play for England. And I think that created a slight sense of distancing. The other thing, of course, that happened, I think, to be perfectly honest, was that Atletico won the league. And I think that the Trippier, at that point, of course, reached the sense where he felt, I came here to win something. I came here to prove a point, and I've done that. And in a way, this is overplaying it a little bit, but in a way, I think there was a sense of, my work here is done. I've done this now. And then, of course, you get to that. There are all sorts of questions that we don't know the answer to in terms of whether the family is happy in Spain, how far he's integrated and so on. And I guess it's just a case of quite liking the idea of going back now.
So you've been there for 22 years. When is your work going to be done?
My work is never done, Daniel. You know that.
Oh, certainly not, Sid. Thank you, as always. Happy New Year to you, mate. Just a reminder, ESPN FC brings you a podcast every single day. You can download that over on the website. Plenty of bonus material for you to enjoy as well. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. What a game it looks set to be at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea against Liverpool on Sunday. It is tight, in fact. You take a look at the bookies, they're struggling to separate the two sides. Manchester City will be hoping it will be a draw between the two teams, which is exactly what Craig is going for, as is Nadim. Meanwhile, Frank Lapouf, with his blue spectacles on, is going for a Chelsea win. Don, of course, yesterday said that he fancied a Liverpool to take all 3 points. Frank, I'm drawn to you. What is it that you've seen from Chelsea over the past few days that makes you think, yep, they're going to go there and they're going to beat Liverpool?
Exactly what you said.
Brilliant.
Well, I try to still have some hopes about the Blues, and I know it's going to be difficult, but let's say that they play at home. It's a must-win game for them, maybe for Liverpool too, if you want to have the chance to reach and catch Manchester City. Even if I think for me the Premier League is already done, but they have to win. They have to show us that they're still the European champion, and they're going to beat Liverpool. So it's possible because they have the players for that. It's going to be the last game for Mendy, like it's going to be the last game for Mane and Salah. Mm. It's going to be a crazy game. Hopefully, I want to see that. Every result will be possible, but I still believe that Chelsea can do the job at the Bridge.
Nadim, there's no Jurgen Klopp on the touchline. He tested positive for COVID. How much of a difference maker is that?
Firstly, I just want to say it'll be a big difference for the Chelsea players because they won't have somebody standing watching them as they do the warm-up before the game.
Yeah, that is
without doubt one of the weirdest, most intimidating things you've ever seen. Such a big fella just watching you the whole time. But yeah, in all seriousness, you can see he drives them forward. It's not like he just sits on the sideline for the duration of a game saying nothing. When he needs to step up and try and raise the tempo amongst the players, he does it. And I think when people look across, they know what to expect from him. So it will be a blow. But at the end of the day, he's probably trained them so well that they know how what to do in this game. They'll be prepared, and I'm sure whoever's coming in who's going to be taking charge instead, I think they'll be able. It's just a shame that they won't have that massive presence on the sideline, but at the end of the day, it's a big game, and those players on the field, they know this goes beyond just senior manager on the sideline, because you've got to go out there and try and win that game.
Does it make a difference, Craig?
Well, I think the one thing I would say is Arsenal saved their best performance, not result, performance of the season today for a time when they had no manager on the touchline. Mikel Arteta was at home. So that's the way forward.
They don't need you.
That's it. Stay at home. If you want to come on by Zoom at half time, that's fine, because we've also got a button that can press that switches you off. So Arsenal performed really well. It doesn't always obviously work that way, but I think clearly he's one of the more, as Arteta is, one of the more energetic and loud managers on the touchline. The team are a kind of mirror image of him as a personality. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose it could make a difference, but I think the players are professional enough. They know what the situation is. City are the team in form. Both of these sides need results. And Chelsea have been fallible recently. So I think it's intriguing for several things, Dan. I mean, one of them being is, obviously, we've talked about it most of the week, or the second half of the week, this Lukaku interview, mm-hmm. What's going to be his scenario? What reaction, if anything, is Tuchel going to get from him, presuming that he plays? And I think you could always put your house on it, he will. And is he going to be able to deliver the goods for this Chelsea side that have been struggling? So I think there's so many facets from both sides that are intriguing, which should make it, hopefully, for a great game.
Do you start him, Frank? Do you play Lukaku?
Dan, sorry, but... I'm sorry. I would play Lukaku. Yes, I would play Lukaku. Yeah, we need a power at front, and I think it's been shown the two last games that Lukaku isn't indispensable if he plays the way that he plays when he came on against Aston Villa and the game after. So yeah, but I just want to go back to the club situation. If he's not there, it's going to change the situation for Trent Alexander-Arnold, because for one half he won't hear the coach telling him what he has to do. It won't be a nightmare for the fourth. It won't be a nightmare for the fourth referee, because Klopp is always shouting to the fourth referee, and people at the bridge won't hear two German talking German on the touchline, insulting maybe themselves, each other, So it would change a lot.
A lot more about Romelu Lukaku and extra time. The boys back with me to answer your tweets, including how the boys would react if a player in their day had come out and made those sort of comments in the media. Be sure to check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's the longest winter break of them all, isn't it, for the Germans? But January 7th sees action return in the Bundesliga, and it's league leaders Bayern Munich taking on Borussia Mönchengladbach. Just a reminder, all of these games available on ESPN+. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Don't forget, La Liga back tomorrow on ESPN+. Getafe against Real Madrid at 8. Then Mallorca against Barca in the late game. Me and Craig will be here to look ahead to that at 2:30. Be sure to stay tuned for now, though, as Extra Time is next. Welcome into the first Extra Time then of 2022. Thank you as always for your tweets. Nathan, Craig and Frank with me. How did you guys bring in the new year? Frank, you were partying up till 4 a.m.
Yes, and I would be the first to answer the question of Extra Time, for 2022. Whatever. No, I had my in-laws and a good friend of mine. He was a legendary actor in France. He played in Moonraker, James Bond, as a French actor. And he was at home. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine and he's a neighbor, and he came with his lovely wife, and we had the six of us, and we had a good Burgundy wine and a champagne rosé before. That was great. We talked and talked and we laughed, and it was fun. Very good New Year's Eve.
Who talked the most, Frank?
Of course me. Of course. I'm always the guy who talks the most.
Craig, did you make it to midnight?
No.
No, that's not a surprise. What time did you...
I made it to about 11:30.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't be bothered staying up.
Well done, Grandpa.
We FaceTimed our son in the UK who lives there, and he was in the pub.
Right.
So that was with his girlfriend. Watched a bit of TV. As soon as the fire went off.
Yeah.
As soon as the log fire went off, that was it.
That was it.
Bed.
Nadim, did you out in Manchester partying up?
Nah, not quite. We had 12 people at our house.
Oh.
But the downside was there were five kids under the age of seven who were there.
Oh.
And they absolutely exhausted everybody.
Yeah.
So we were just the walking wounded come midnight. But we managed to make it past 12, had a few drinks, and then went back to bed. And we were woken up at 6, 7 a.m. anyway by all the kids. So yeah, it was a great New Year's. It's great to be back.
Yeah, happy New Year to you, Nadim. Okay, would it be a mistake to drop Lukaku versus Liverpool and send a message based on recent events, or better to start him and his game speaks for itself and the support hopefully get behind him again if Chelsea win and he plays well? Nadim, what do you think?
If he's the right man for the game, then he should be picked. I think, as far as I'm concerned, I think Tuchel would have spoken to Lukaku and asked him about the quotes, or maybe Lukaku went to him to explain them. So I wouldn't be surprised if that relationship is dealt with that particular situation. So if he's going to go, if he's the right man, then pick him. But the downside is Lukaku can't have that conversation with all those fans that are going to be in the stadium.
Yep.
So they're going to be judging him slightly differently until he comes out and says something else. So I think he should play him. I'm sure he's desperate, because as he said in his quotes, he's a professional. Like, he made sure to mention that. So the fact is, if he's being selected, it doesn't matter whether he wants to be there, be somewhere else, be on the moon, who cares? He's going to do everything he can for Chelsea to try and win something this year. So I expect him to play, to do really well, and hopefully the crowd get behind him, and then he can explain his comments afterwards.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it, Craig? Because we know how fickle fans are. He scores a hat-trick in the first 10 minutes. They won't care about these quotes.
No, absolutely not. And listen, if he performs tomorrow and beyond, as I don't see any reason why not. I mean, he's got two goals already in the last two games, one off the bench, one starting. Then fans are not really fussed about anything other than commitment. And as long as he shows commitment on the field, and I'm sure that's a conversation that Tuchel has had with him. Listen, you've said what you said. Know you love Italy. Don't agree with it, blah, blah, blah. But I just want commitment. And listen, Tuchel's not in a scenario to send a message. He's in a title race. And oh, by the way, he works for an owner who spends big and wants results. So he just needs to cajole the player. And I really don't think short term it's going to be an issue. I think down the road, longer term, what happens, that's a different story. But I think short term, as Nedim said, I don't see much difference in performance from Romelu Lukaku. He wants to score goals. He'll play tomorrow.
Frank, I'm not sure how much you've been following this story through your rosé champagne eyes, but just to take you through exactly what Lukaku said. He said that Inter Milan, he never wanted to leave. He said they have the best fans in the world. Talked about link up with Lautaro Martinez. He said, no, don't come to Chelsea. Wait for me. I'll be back at Inter soon. And that leads us to the next question, which is, what would it have been like for Lukaku to walk in a Chelsea dressing room when you were playing, Frank, after saying these sort of things?
Well, I don't know why he said that, but I had two other stories. When I see Sergio Ramos or Lionel Messi coming to Paris Saint-Germain and crying the day before coming on the press conference, nobody has been resentful toward them because they were happy to have them. And I just want to remember the fans that last year, the main concern that we have, even if Chelsea won the Champions League, we didn't have a striker. We complained about the fact that Chelsea didn't have a striker. They needed one. They have one. Okay, he made that, which is for me not a very clever comment. And he should have kept that for himself. But he said what he said. But as the guy said, you know, if he scores two goals tomorrow in the first 10 minutes, they're going to be happy with him. And they're going to cheer him up. So it's down to Romelu to do the job. And if he does and he scores goals, everything's going to be forgotten.
Dan, let's just look at this briefly another way. The boys will know, dressing rooms can be a harsh place at times, but they can also be a great place for diffusing scenarios like this by humour.
Right.
And let's not forget that you know, and I don't agree with his timing of talking in the way that he talked about, you know, going back to the Inter so soon and the love of the fans and don't come to Chelsea when they've made a big commitment financially on him. I don't agree with those comments. However, there are at least two or three Chelsea players out of contract in the summer and refusing at the moment to sign new deals. So commitment's not just about what you say in the press. So, you know, I don't foresee, bearing in mind players look after themselves, this is going to be a scenario that becomes a problem within the dressing room. Unless, as I said yesterday, results just keep going south continually, then players will look for a scapegoat. But it's not just Lukaku talking about leaving a club. That's made the headlines. Azpilicueta's out of contract, Rudiger's out of contract, Christensen's out of contract. And certainly at least two of the three have refused to agree to terms. So you could look at that and say, well, where's their commitment?
Nadim, how would the City locker room handle this?
I think, sorry, Dan.
Oh, sorry, Frank. we're New Year's Eve again. It's okay.
Sorry. Okay, you want to talk to you? Want me to talk or not?
Come on.
No.
Okay. It's just the fact that I think Lukaku would have played with us the day after. Would have come into the dressing room. We would have said, you know what? You crack us up. You know, you wanted to go back. You say that Chelsea is the best club in the world for you when you were young, and you signed for us, and you came back to us. So what kind of crap did you say to the press? You know, now you have to deal with the fans. Good luck. We're gonna be there. We're gonna back you up. But you have to do the job. It would have been under pressure, but a nice pressure.
Right. I see. Nadim.
Yeah. Firstly, if anybody at all is close to him, then none of this would be a surprise to what he's saying if they know that's to be the truth. But if you didn't know this, I think you'd have the right to go and ask him, say what's going on. But then the fact is, one thing we've seen across many years within football is you don't necessarily need to get on with the people who you're playing alongside, and as long as the commitment's there, you can still be successful. So it's an interesting thing for him to say. But as someone would say, as Louise was saying, O'Hara, the producer, to say that the Inter fans are the best fans in the world, as you're about to play at home and you're committed to Chelsea, that is a bit out there. But it's weird because it feels like him saying what he said, it's almost like he's brand new. And he's a really intelligent guy, so I can't wait to hear what he says next in terms of trying to defuse this. Because it just feels unbelievable. Like, what happened? What went wrong? You know, it's so, so bizarre.
Meanwhile, Craig, do we need a Super League? All the top leagues in Europe, the winners are pretty much already decided, and we're only halfway through the season. The Italians are angry at that. They'll say there's still a title race in Italy.
No. I think I saw somebody talking about it the other day that somebody said it's always been this way. Worryingly, it hasn't, and I think the number of teams able to challenge now is more limited than it was, and the money is flowing more readily and quickly to certain clubs. The disparity is getting greater. And I don't have the direct answer to solve that, but it's certainly not the Super League for sure. We might see a Man City win again this year. It's not been total domination. We talked about it yesterday. We have seen Chelsea, Liverpool and Leicester win leagues, but it is worrying when certain leagues have only two or three teams constantly that can just compete. So it is a concern. But I don't believe the Super League, I don't know what the guy's saying, I don't believe the Super League is the answer to these problems.
Nadim, do you care? City running away with the title, not as exciting as maybe it has been in the past?
I don't know what you're talking about, buddy. Don't know what you're talking about. Listen, it's not over yet. It's not over yet. They're just doing really, really well. But I think I know. But I think the danger is, I looked at the stat earlier, and under Pep Guardiola, City have had four runs where they've won at least 10 games in a row. And then the next managers to do that, like Sir Alex Ferguson with two and a couple other managers at two. So when they get like this, doesn't matter whether you do really well, unless you're perfect, you're losing ground. And that's a shame. But one thing I would say, to be honest, is that if another manager was in charge of Manchester City right now, I don't think they'd still be in the same position that they're in. So you can talk about a Super League, but sometimes it's all the things together, as opposed to just the fact that this team have these players. But, you know, credit to them, and, you know, long may it continue if they're going to be playing the way that they're doing. And, you know, not everybody loves it, but I'm quite enjoying it for now.
Yeah, I bet you are. Frank, do you think if Chelsea lose tomorrow, they could end up not only losing the battle for the title, but also end up in a top four battle with Spurs quickly catching up and Arsenal playing as well as they're playing?
Well, it would be over for sure for the title. And they will have some concerns, you know, about the four behind them, or the five behind them. Coming back. But I believe that they are stronger than the four behind them, and they can catch and keep, sorry, the third spot. You know, that I always said. I think it's over for the first spot. Maybe they can fight for the second one, but I don't see them dropping and finish four or fifth or six or even seven. No, I don't think. I think they're going to finish second or third.
Final question, Craig. What position do Spurs need to address to make sure they finish top four?
Make sure they finish top four. Well, I think they're solid enough in goal with Lloris. Back lines looked okay. I'm going to say
centre back.
Well, centre back or centre midfield. Right. Winks has done well coming in, passing the ball. I don't think I think Ndombele looks as if he's on his way out. He doesn't fancy him, I don't think. Skip played in there today. Central midfielder. Dynamic central midfielder.
Final question, Craig. How much of a role did you have in decorating the fireplace behind you?
None.
Yeah.
Is it decorated? this is the basement. This is not the lounge. This is the basement. The lounge. Mrs. Burley has the lounge fireplace decorated. This is the.
You still got baubles there and a wreath.
Yeah.
Not now. I'm not.
Christmas is over in the Burley household, if it ever really started.
So you have two fireplaces.
Thank you very much.
Unbelievable.
We're done.
Great. You must be so rich.
ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us as, of course, we'll be looking back to Liverpool against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.